Welcome back. We celebrated Juneteenth this week. It commemorates the ending of slavery in the United States. And, you know, I was a little puzzled because I knew that President Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, but it was a couple years before Juneteenth happened. So what happened in between and why did it take so long? So as I was pondering that, I thought one of the best places in the world to get the answer to that is the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield. I've probably been there 20 times. I think it's a wonderful place, and we are pleased to have as our next guest the executive director of the Library Museum, Christina Schutt. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thanks for having me today. It's so great to be chatting with you.
And so you were appointed in 2021, and I see that you've launched some initiatives to make the institution more welcoming and inclusive, and that you've hosted actually the signing ceremony to make Juneteenth an official state holiday. So first of all, let's just talk about Juneteenth and the Emancipation Proclamation. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what was the Emancipation Proclamation and what did it actually do to take effect?
Well, the Emancipation Proclamation was a document that was issued by Lincoln. And initially, he kind of issued it actually on September 22nd after the Battle of Antietam. And this military strategy, the idea behind it was that it was meant to kind of cripple the South's efforts, the insurgency that they had committed against the United States government. And so the goal was that he issued this almost like a warning, a warning shot over the bow, so to speak. And then January 1st, 1863, it was meant to go into effect. What it does is it takes the United States Armed Forces and it transforms it into really this sort of freedom force. So as they're taking Confederate insurgent territory, as they're taking territory back for the United States government, it frees the enslaved people in those areas. Essentially what Lincoln says is, hey, you say that enslaved people are property, so we're going to treat them as property and confiscate them as we would any other type of wartime measure. The other thing that the Emancipation Proclamation does, which is, I think, one of its most important facets, is that it allows for the enlistment of black soldiers. And so what it does is it allows for about a little over 200,000 black troops to really invigorate the United States Armed Forces and allow them to really turn the tide of the war.
Interesting. So then why did all of this time go by when, you know, until Juneteenth happened and it involves Texas? Can you explain to our listeners what happened in those 2.5 years and why did Texas take so long to finally free their enslaved people?
Well, so essentially when it goes into effect, it actually frees no one on the first day that it goes into effect. Because remember what I said, it only goes into effect as the U.S. Army is taking territory. And so it takes the U.S. Army, specifically General Granger, about 2.5 years to reach Texas. And not only does it take him 2.5 years, but of course this happens after when would have been the harvest time there. And so he gets to Texas in 1865. And he declares, hey, this Emancipation Proclamation is in effect now. We, the United States government, are here to back it up. These people likely would have known about the Emancipation Proclamation through newspapers, through other types of folks coming in and out of ports. But again, what happens here is that now you've got the U.S. Army to back up and support these newly free black individuals. And so that's part of the reason that it takes so long, is that it's one thing to say someone's free, but you really got to have the muscle to back it up, so to speak.
Got it. We're talking to the executive director of the Abraham Lincoln Library Museum in Springfield, Christina Schutt, who's been kind enough to come on a nice Sunday. I will tell you that really, I think the library and museum is just a fabulous place. And like I said, I've been there probably 20 times. And every time I go there, I enjoy the same things over and over. And then I enjoy something new from a different perspective. I mean, from, you know, the exhibits about the First Lady's dresses to, you know, the reenactment sort of the assassination and the funeral train and all of those things. It's just a very moving place, and you feel like you really get to know Abraham Lincoln. I don't know if you feel like it when you walk through that library, Christina. Do you feel like you like he's there?
Absolutely. I mean, when the designers kind of created the museum almost 20 years ago now, That was the whole intent. They wanted you to feel as if you were literally walking through Lincoln's life, through these scenes in Lincoln's life. So, of course, you walk through a log cabin. It's actually an authentic log cabin that was from kind of a couple cabins pieced together of the same time period. So it's the same style, it's the same size as what the Lincoln cabin would have been. You walk through, as you said, different moments of his life, like the Stephen Douglas debate. You walk through things like the White House. And as you walk through, you're exploring what it is Lincoln was experiencing, some of the things he felt, as he's dealing with all of this sort of challenge and turmoil that the country was going through.
And his personal stuff, too. I mean, you know, he had a lot of personal tragedy, and it's almost like you can see it on his face. And it, certainly when you go to this library, you understand that. What else should people know who are coming to the library museum to view it with their kids or with anybody? What are some other exhibits that you think the public might be interested in knowing are there?
Well, I have to say one of my favorite exhibits is our Ghost of the Library show.
Oh, yes.
If folks haven't seen it, it really is kind of spellbounding, so to speak.
Yes.
It's this really sort of magical experience where you get to explore why it is that we preserve old things. Why do we keep history for our children, for future generations, and what can it mean and tell us about the past? And so that for sure is probably one of my favorite exhibits. We've also got right now a special traveling exhibit from the Smithsonian Institution all about the 1968 Poor People's Campaign that will run through this summer, and that's definitely something not to be missed as well.
Just for people who are scholars, tell us how the library works. I know there's the library part where scholars who are Lincoln scholars or Civil War scholars can do their work and look at artifacts and things like that. Who accesses the library for the most part?
Well, it's really folks from all over the world. So if you've read a book about Lincoln, they've probably done their research at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. And not only books, but you think about films. So, if there's films that are about Lincoln, some folks may remember Steven Spielberg's Lincoln film about the 13th Amendment. He did his research. His team did their research at the Lincoln Library. And so we really are the kind of place to learn about Lincoln's life, his family, as well as, of course, Illinois history. And that's one of the things that I love about it is that, you know, we really strive to make our library approachable to people. So when you make your appointment online and come in the door, we're ready for you with all of the incredible materials, really over 13 million unique items that we have in our collection that tell the story of Illinois and that tell Lincoln's story. And so we love when folks come and visit and get to see a little piece of really their history. That's what we're preserving, is that American history.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the museum and maybe, you know, give some advice to people who might want to go down there and with some resources to access, because there's some other things in the Springfield area that you're not going to want to miss. We're talking to the executive director of the Abraham Lincoln Library Museum, Christina Schutt, and you're listening to WGN. Welcome back. We are talking to Christina Schutt, who is the executive director of the Abraham Lincoln Library and Museum in Springfield. Christina, I just was curious, what do you think as far as how Lincoln rates as far as presidents? I mean, I know books have been written about it and stuff is on the internet all the time, but what do you think as far as that goes?
Well, you know, I have to say that he rates pretty high at the top of the list. Consistently, when people do surveys, Lincoln is actually one of the top three presidents. Lincoln is probably one of the most famous Americans, if not the most famous Americans. I've actually heard it said that there are more books about Abraham Lincoln than any other person other than Jesus of Nazareth at the Library of Congress.
So, oh, my gosh.
I feel like if people are still writing books about him, that should speak a little bit to how popular he still remains and how still talked about he is even today.
And apropos of completely nothing, there was a news story, I don't know when it surfaced, but I saw it. It was about an artifact. It was his stovepipe hat. And I don't want to really get into it in great detail, but, you know, there was a talk that it really wasn't authentic. Whatever happened to that whole controversy?
Well, of course, the hat was owned by our former foundation, with whom we're not in any kind of business relationship with anymore. So ultimately, that belonged to them, and they refused to allow any more research to go on with the hat, which, again, is part of the reason why we ended our business relationship with them. So that's kind of what I know about the hat, but it'd be a great question for them.
So you have a master's degree in history and also library science, and I've heard you talk in some of your videos about, you know, history is not just what happened many years ago, and is what Shakespeare said is what's past is prologue. You know, taking that to heart, you know, when you go to a library like the Lincoln Library, what are you looking at, and what can the people who visit see, and how can they extrapolate that into their present lives?
Well, one of the things I hope visitors walk away with after they come visit the ALPLM or even just study and learn more about Lincoln is that Lincoln was someone who really evolved over time. You know, Lincoln wasn't the same person that he was as a child or as a teenager or even as a young adult, you know, starting his life here in New Salem and then in Springfield. And so I think that's something we could all learn in our own leadership and our own lives, that we have to be willing to evolve, to change our perspective about things, especially as we get new information. You know, one of my favorite things about Lincoln is that he was always anti-slavery. But you know, Lincoln wasn't always for black people, but as he began to have relationships with black people, as he began to know black people in his life, I like to think that shifted some of his thinking. As he saw the bravery of black soldiers fighting in the Civil War, it tremendously impacted his feelings about African-Americans in this country. And so to start as someone who, you know, was anti-slavery, but not necessarily pro-black people, and really moved to this idea that, you know, at the end of his life, he's considering giving black men the right to vote, I think is a tremendous transformation in one person's life. And so if we can take that in our modern times and think about how, as we learn more information, what are the things that we can continue to grow on? How can we continue to have conversations with people to learn more about things? And evolve, right, as individuals.
Well, and in this day of an age of mass polarization, you know, it's almost like politicians are not allowed to change their minds because then they're going to alienate their base. And you know, Lincoln did that, and he pivoted. And I don't know about the acceptance level of the public, but it all worked out in the end, didn't it?
It mostly did, yeah. I mean, one of the things that folks often don't realize is that Lincoln was only elected with 39% of the vote. And so not even the entire country voted for Abraham Lincoln to some extent. And so, you know, he really comes in. We think about him as this really popular person today, but he really comes in without a lot of support. But one thing he is committed in his mind to do is to keep the Union together, to keep the states united as one, and he's willing to defend the country to do that. And I think that's, again, it's something that we can kind of keep in mind, those that core value of democracy, of a commitment to integrity. That's definitely something that I hope our leaders continue to lean into, even today.
What are some little-known facts about Abraham Lincoln? Do you have any things that you've learned now being the executive director that maybe our listeners don't know about?
Well, let's see. Well, some folks may not know that Lincoln is actually the only U.S. president to hold a patent. He actually solicited for a patent. He never created the object. But he tried to get a patent for, or ultimately got a patent for, an invention that helped boats cross the river. And so that's pretty cool. He was actually really interested in technology at the time, which I think is super fascinating. You know, because again, it's this always sort of learning mentality. Something else people may not realize about Lincoln was that he actually really loved dirty jokes. he was a pretty funny guy, and he loved to tell a joke, and he loved to tell dirty jokes. And that's something that kind of surprises me, because again, we think about Lincoln as this sort of stoic marble stature, but to remember that he was a man, he was a person, he was a father, he was a husband, just like we are today.
So where might I find those dirty jokes? Is there some
of course, check out our Papers of Abraham Lincoln project at papersofabrahamlincoln.org, where we are working to catalog every single thing that Lincoln wrote. You might find a couple of surprising things within the papers. But, you know, it's definitely something that I think our historians always enjoy, some of their Some of Lincoln's kind of crazy jokes.
I love it.
Which, of course, we can't say today.
I probably can't.
Modern family audience.
That's right. Yeah, this is a Disney crowd here. And, you know, as a lawyer, you know, we as lawyers kind of look up to Lincoln. He had so many good quotes, and he you know, represented people of all walks of life. He represented people in criminal cases and civil cases. I mean, he's kind of a scrappy country lawyer. And, you know, what do you make of his skills as a lawyer? From what you know?
Well, he was a very talented lawyer. And I think what's so surprising about this is Lincoln doesn't go to law school. He actually borrows books from other lawyers here in town, including a man named John Tubbs Stewart, who ultimately will become one of his first law partners. But he borrows books and he reads the law. And as a result, he's able to understand it well enough to not only pass the bar, but to be pretty successful as a lawyer. He and Mary had a very kind of middle class, upper middle class existence. In fact, their house size grew as Lincoln's law practice grew, as his wealth grew as a lawyer. So did his house, both literally and really figuratively and literally, right? They add an entire second story to the home. So I think it tells you that Lincoln was a pretty good lawyer. I mean, he not only sued railroad companies, but he also defends them at times. He's always tries to do the best for his client and always tries to be on the right side of the law. So yeah, he was a pretty decent lawyer.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the practicalities of visiting the museum. What do you think would be a good trip for a family to come down and see the museum? How much time do you think should be allotted? And what are some of the other possible sites to see in the Springfield area?
Well, I think coming down to Springfield is a great, not just a great day trip, but it can also be a really great weekend trip. Especially if you're in the summer, there are so many things that are going on in Springfield, festivals and events for families and children. It's really just a great time to be down here. And so, you know, we usually tell folks plan to spend, you know, 2 hours coming to visit the Library Museum. And what's great is so much of what you can see is super accessible to the train station. So you can take the Amtrak just down from Chicago, right here to Springfield, and you can walk just about everywhere, not only to the Library and Museum, but you can see Lincoln's home. You can actually go out to Lincoln's tomb. In fact, during the summer, we're actually running a trolley between all of those sites to make it really easy and accessible for visitors to come see it.
And so people...
In addition to that, of course, we've got...
Go ahead.
I was going to say that we have the Susan Lawrence Dana House. So that's another great, if you've ever been interested in Frank Lloyd Wright architecture, it's an almost exact, complete, not only complete house, but I think 90% of the furniture in the house is original to that house.
That is a beautiful place. And again, like you said, everything's kind of walkable in that Springfield area. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about New Salem. I used to own a house in Petersburg, Illinois, that's where New Salem is. And, you know, it's a recreated town, you know, back in those days. And so you can walk through and see the mill. And then, you know, there's some character actors who are there on occasion, and you can interact with them. It's sort of like a little Williamsburg, if you will. Has a visitor center where you can learn stuff about Lincoln and about the, life in those days. So that the trolley goes from the museum there, does it not?
It does, yeah. It goes out to Petersburg. And what's great about that is not only can you see New Salem, but of course you can see downtown Petersburg, which really is having a kind of renaissance right now. You can go to Hand of Fate Brewery and get yourself a nice cold pint. As well as visit Broad Gauge for an excellent afternoon lunch.
Not to mention a lot of antique stores if you're into that. It's just a charming little town, you know, one of those with the courthouse in the middle and all the little stores around it. You can visualize that. Really a charming, wonderful place. No, I highly, highly recommend all of this. I'm sure the library's website will have a lot of this information. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you join us again if there's some events or some things that are going on that we can let our listeners know about. Executive Director Christina Schutt, thank you so much for joining us on WGN.
Thanks for having me today.
Oh, great. And have a great summer.